Mauritius and its central role in basically hiding the colonial wealth of portions of Africa?
Absolutely, yes. So Mauritius is a tax haven that has appeared on the scene a little more recently, sort of since the 1990s. And basically, Mauritius has, through a combination of so-called tax treaties and very low tax rates for companies registered in Mauritius, Mauritius has found a way to make itself a sort of stepping stone for investments in sub-Saharan Africa. And it means that Western companies that want to, funnel funds, route funds into sub-Saharan African countries, they basically go through Mauritius in order to avoid paying taxes in these countries in sub-Saharan Africa and to instead benefit from the extremely low or zero tax rates that Mauritius essentially sort of offers them. And this is particularly harmful for economies in this part of the world because they rely to a greater extent than many rich countries on corporate taxes as a source of revenue, which has to do with the sort of makeup of these economies where you have a big informal sector where it is much harder to collect revenue and collect taxes, which means that corporate taxes, which are generally speaking easier to collect sometimes, are an important source of revenue.
Professor Vanessa Ogle, I want to thank you for being with us. University of California, Berkeley history professor writing a book on offshore tax havens. And thank you so much to Ben Hallman, who is senior editor at ICIJ, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. We'll link to the articles on the Pandora Papers. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Thank you, Amy. It is 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's Tuesday evening. That means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Thank you. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Do you read me?
I do. Is it true that you've been sitting on a Club Mate milk crate all these weeks?
Well,
you deserve a chair. I didn't know you didn't have a chair.
I improvise sometimes when things are a little frantic.
Well, I never, you're like 2 feet shorter than I guess you should be, so that would sort of make sense.
I do feel like I'm sitting at the kids' table or something,
you know,
like
I'm sorry.
In a high chair.
I should have realized that, but I'm so caught up in the show, you know? It's all about the show. Putting on a...
It must go on.
A good performance and getting those ratings up, because that's what it's all about.
No, it's individual pledges from members of the community radio... audience.
Is this a fundraiser? Are we doing fundraising?
No, but that's generally how it works on this frequency.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which one? 90.1 or 107.3?
All of them.
Uh-huh.
All of them.
Wow.
Two-lay frequency.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Did you hear they put a commercial station on 107.3 in Bridgeport? Yeah.
There were rumors. I don't know if that's true.
No, that's a fact. Yeah, they put a huge 250-watt station there just to spite us. Yeah. Kind of, you know, okay, here's an interesting story.
Oh, you mean the terrorist jammer?
No, I wouldn't go that far.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But this
not
is a station.
One.
I'm not going to name them. But they have a very powerful AM signal at 600 kilohertz.
Well, what do they do down there?
I'm not
there?
Naming them. I said I wasn't going to name them. I'm not naming them. I'm just saying they're at 600 kilohertz on the AM dial, and you can get them on the moon because they're very powerful. But apparently not powerful enough, because they had to get a frequency at the same frequency that we use. 250 watts. We're 6 watts. This is what we're dealing with. David and Goliath here.
You think they just accidentally threw a switch somewhere? They don't even realize it.
Well, they threw a switch with the FCC and got approval somehow, and we couldn't get approval for something like that. It's really...
You don't say.
It's dirty business. It really is. So, yeah, those folks out there, I don't know how I'm talking to you, because you were receiving us at that frequency, which was designed... to offset the interference to 90.1 FM, also from a station in Connecticut. So we got another frequency, and now there's another station that came on the air and is interfering with us. So I don't know, do we have to get a third frequency? What do we have to do? What do we have to do to get the signal out there? Well, there's always WUSB FM.
I think higher ground.
I'm sorry, WUSB.FM. And you can listen to us live on that. And you can also pledge through that website, as Kyle was mentioning earlier. So
the more pledges we get, the more we can focus on how to mitigate stuff like that,
uh-huh.
and keep good quality programming, interesting shows, good music, all of that coming your way.
I just got a letter from Stony Brook University asking me to donate to Stony Brook University. I get those all the time. On the back, at least for me, it says you can donate to the WUSB Fund. And if you get that on your solicitation letter from the university, please check that box, because then... the money goes to us. If you don't have that, because the computer decides who gets it and who doesn't, you can always write that in, and we'll get the money that way.
Yeah, the more credit you can give, let us know. Let us know what's going on. We rely on feedback just as much as you rely on good tunes and interesting conversations. So that's what we're about.
Such interesting conversation. I hear so much of interest on this station. I find myself listening at all different times.
Yeah, so anyway, give at your leisure, as mm-hmm. we encourage folks to do.
Yeah, but don't dawdle either.
Leisurely way, no, all business.
The bill payers, they don't wait around long, and before you know it, they're carting off equipment. Anyway, yeah, so we'll sort these issues out, with your help, obviously. So how have you been this past week? It's been a week since our last show.
Mm. A week.
Exactly a week.
What is a week, really?
It's a good question. I'm not really sure. We're the only animals on the planet that recognize a week. So I guess it's kind of artificial.
Okay. I've just been... I don't know what's going on.
Uh-huh.
I think there's some, you know, all kinds of news. There's crazy stuff going on. I don't even know where to start. You just try me. I'll listen. If I know anything, I'll say something.
Well, how about, okay, I'll start.
What do you want to talk about?
Yeah. Well, no, I don't want to talk about it, but I feel I have to talk about it. Frustration. My frustration. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I just tried to deposit checks in my damn ATM at a local bank, and it got rejected. I was in a hurry, so I didn't have time to go in and hash it out with the teller. And it's not the first time this happened. These are two checks I'm trying to deposit. Both of them just rejected, no reason given. You know, they're checks. They're printed by other computers someplace else, and the computer in the ATM says, no, not gonna even look at this. Here are your checks back. Get out of here. This also happened last week. I was depositing. I get a lot of checks, I guess. No, this week, actually, I think I'm depositing more checks than I have all year. But I was depositing a tax refund from New York State, the state that we're in. And for some reason, the ATM just kept returning that check. I put it in several times. It just said, nope, I don't recognize it. Even though it displayed it on the screen and it got the number right. It said, this is how much it is, but it wouldn't accept it. Could not figure this out. So, you know, cussing gently under my breath, I said, okay, you know, it's something like 2 o'clock in the morning. I just happened to be passing by this vestibule. I figured this is a good time to get this out of the way before it deteriorates inside my pocket. And when I tried to leave, I couldn't get out. The door, something happened to the locking mechanism. I pushed it, nothing happened. And I was like, oh my God, do they think I'm trying to pass a bad check and they've got a security system a lot more advanced than I thought they did? They've locked me in here and the FBI is on the way? Is that what's going on? I'm pushing the thing, I'm pounding it with my fist, I'm trying everything possible. And, you know, there's nothing I can do inside there. I know there's a camera. I don't know if anybody's watching the camera, but I'm starting to panic. What am I going to do? Am I going to have to somehow kick down the door? And if I do, with what? Or I could kick down the other door and find myself inside the branch. Maybe that's what I want to do because they have phones. At least I can call somebody. Then I realized, hey, I have a phone in my pocket. So I decided to call you who were waiting in the car outside. And I picked up my phone and started to call your phone, but then something confusing happened.
I was in the car and I heard a phone ringing, like I was making a call. And what it was is the call being placed from your phone ending up on the Bluetooth system in the vehicle. So I was hearing your call. You probably heard nothing. So
no, I heard your damn answering machine.
You place a call to me.
Yeah.
Then I picked up at one point. Maybe after a subsequent
call.
Well,
it got really confusing because that was your ring that you were hearing. I was calling your phone to say, Kyle, get me out of here somehow. I don't know how you're going
to
do it.
I was trying to call you back after that.
Yeah, but I didn't know what was going on. And as soon as I picked up the phone, I started going through the speakers in the car, which is a really interesting security issue. We'll get into some other time. So at some point we were able to connect. It took a while and several phone calls. I don't know exactly how we connected, but I said, Kyle, I'm locked in the ATM. Can you please help me out?
Yeah, eventually we were speaking directly. I think I turned off the car. I don't know what happened. No, I got out.
You just got out. I went to the door and said, what is going on?
What is happening? What are you doing in there?
Eventually, you probably would have done that anyway since I didn't emerge.
It was wild. But
what if I wasn't with somebody? What if I didn't have a phone? It was really very frightening.
A mechanical issue leading to basically being trapped in a confined space. There's people that have really serious issues with that, too.
Yeah.
Like, cannot handle it. Small confined place, middle of the night, you know, what do you do? What prepares you for that instance? Who's carrying a crowbar or something just cause?
And you know, this totally eclipsed my annoyance at not having the check get deposited, which it turned out later when I finally went into the branch and asked them about it, they said, oh yeah, sometimes it doesn't read the magnetic ink. Why? And it's 2021. Really? We haven't gotten past the magnetic ink. So anyway, you were able to get me out. I don't know exactly how. I think you put a card in and somehow that unlocked it, or
I thought you wanted me to use the card like on the door latch somehow. Like I thought you were trying to do some old school mechanical shimming the door open.
Yeah, that trick. I don't know if that still works.
Do you have a card? And I was like, yeah, well, what am I going to do with it? This is like a hardened outside door.
I meant a magnetic strip card.
Yeah, you're just like, put it any card. So I realized, oh, you just want me to unlock it as though I was trying to enter. Like,
and I didn't
other...
expect that to work. Why would
it
that work?
It works. Any card works.
No, apparently. I know that. It's supposed to work, but if the locking mechanism is jammed, how come your card unlocked it and me physically wasn't able to unlock it?
Yeah, because the mechanical release inside was off its hinge, so it wasn't actually disconnecting inside. But the release from the card mechanism is magnetic. So it verifies the card, then unlocks a magnet, basically turns off the power to the magnet, and that latch that's ordinarily securing the door and can only be opened from the inside with that mechanism allows the latch to go free without being released.
Here's a suggestion.
I'm not a door person.
No, I'm not blaming you. I'm saying, here's a suggestion. If you're designing an ATM vestibule, have that on the inside as well. Because if there's a situation where magnetically it can unlock, but physically it can't, you want to be able to get out. You know, that's really important if you're stuck inside.
I seem to remember we had the opposite problem at the old radio station. We had all kinds of doors there that were in various states of repair. And,
oh, yeah.
It was a whole thing. Wasn't it simplex?
We took that simplex lock apart.
We took it apart. And I did, because we were so frustrated with it not working the right way. Uh-huh. And I, gosh, doors and keys. I think I bet I went and got a new lock set for it. Or I was like,
we were working on that all night long. And we had it was basically people couldn't get into the station half the time. So we had to leave it propped open until we figured out how to fix that.
And then we tried to put a new electronic one on.
We tried all kinds of things. Nothing really worked.
And then the university people came and put a simplex back on it.
Yeah, and then they closed the building.
And then they demolished and gutted the inside. And
The old Union building.
Is it open again? Yeah.
Well, the old Union building, they have reopened. But here's the funny thing. They reopened it a couple of months ago, maybe only a few weeks ago. And literally the week after they reopened the new Union building, Ida came into town. Hurricane, tropical storm, whatever you want to call her. And dumped more rain than we've ever seen before. And it was massive flooding in two buildings on campus. The New Union was one of them. And the thing is, for those of you who don't know your history, the Union building has had a long and proud history of flooding from day one. And the reason for that, this is the story, is that there were many mix-ups in the 1960s when they were building the buildings. Nobody knows why. They built the library backwards. Yes, they did. They built the library backwards. And because of that, there was a bridge, a concrete bridge, that was supposed to go from the second floor of the Student Union building directly to the library. Well, since they were looking at the blueprints backwards, apparently, and they built the entire library backwards, the bridge no longer was able to go there because there wasn't a place to receive the bridge. Whereas if you went to the other side of the library, to this day, you can still see the other side of the bridge waiting to connect to a bridge that will never come. So what they wound up doing was making the bridge make a left turn and go to the Fine Arts Center, which had not yet been built at the time this whole screw up happened. So that's one. The second fantastic mix up happened when they used the wrong concrete, and the concrete that was meant for the basement of the old Student Union building was instead used in the lecture center in the middle of campus. And that is why the lecture center in the middle of campus can withstand anything, because it's basement concrete meant to withstand all sorts of things, whereas what was used for the Union basement was not nearly as strong, and it constantly flooded. And that is the story of construction at Stony Brook in the 1960s. They since demolished the bridge. They've completely refurbished the Union, but the Union has reflooded. I'm not sure if they have a plan to fix that, or just maybe hope that storms like Ida don't come around too often. How did we get over there? How did we get to the Union building? Because you were talking about doors. Yeah, doors. We were stuck trying to get in or out of places. Oh, boy. You know, it's a lot easier when you do the show remotely. You don't have to worry about access.
It's true benefit. Mm-hmm. You know what else I was thinking of was our trip to the Bronx.
Oh, yeah, we went to the Bronx, didn't we? That was a week ago Wednesday. Yeah, because we didn't do the other radio show. And we got invited to the game with a bunch of other people, friends of ours. I did not know this, but bleacher seats are cheap I mean, I figured to go to a baseball game, you have to spend like hundreds of dollars or at least, you know, up to 100. But it's like $10, $15 to see a baseball game with a pretty good view as well. And that is awesome. And I think that's true of pretty much all ballparks now. Didn't know that. I did not know that. Not my favorite team, the New York Yankees, but I don't care. You know, I it's not the team so much. It's the event. What did you think?
Well, I had never been to a Yankees game before. I think I'd seen them play elsewhere maybe once in my life.
I went as a kid a lot at the old Yankee Stadium.
I can't remember that far back exactly what games I saw and did not. But this game was special. Just being in the city, home field, they played the Rangers.
Texas Rangers.
And it was really an interesting game in and of itself.
No, it was a great game.
It was fantastic.
Because the Yankees fell behind, and then all these things kept happening where they kept almost catching up, and then they eventually caught up, and so many things happened. So many interesting plays. There was a play at the plate. There were doubles and singles and also errors and things like that. A crazy person ran onto the field at one point. That's entertaining.
And contested play at home.
This game has everything. The only thing I haven't seen so far is a bench clearing brawl or a home run. Well, we didn't get the brawl, but we did get the home run. And that was awesome too. And the Yankees pulled it out and won. And here's the interesting part. The season is over. And the Yankees made it to the playoffs by one game. If they had not won the game that we saw that night, they would not be in the playoffs now. Think about that. We helped. We helped because we were cheering for
the numbers
for that
win.
Team.
No, it was cool to cheer and know and just really get into the game and watch. Uh-huh. And I enjoyed the vantage we had. The seats you're talking about, the bleacher seats were way in left field.
Yes.
In the center, left center. And that far away, you still see a whole lot of stuff. And I think we didn't know what kind of where we would be in the stadium itself. So we had an idea, we might be up in some special section or some, nosebleed armchairs or mm-hmm. something. This was the best.
This was really
the
good.
Best way to see it. Like you said, the cost is just right. And I think that it's the way to experience and see the game. You're there, right there, for all those big hits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so people trying to catch balls, and always the warm-up balls are thrown out to the outfield. And
right.
There's like a lot of interest in getting catching one and maybe getting one signed. The other interesting thing is there was a whole team from Jersey that of like a little league team.
Yeah, it was like every kid in that part of Jersey was there.
And it must have been such a cool
Union
experience.
City, I think.
Yeah, they were there, and that was really cool to be around players themselves who are, you know, aspiring and just able to go for an outing and check out a game and not be like excluded because it's some adult thing or
what's cool is to see kids and adults hanging over the railing shouting things at the players, and the players responded hearing them, so
there's a whole conversation.
Yeah,
you get to like hear that, you get to be a part of it, people that know the whole how the season's gone or how a particular player, what they're like.
There's all kinds of personal things going on. One guy near us was claiming that a certain player owed him a run. I don't know what that even means, but kind of accessibility I think is really pretty cool.
One of the players was like throwing a ball to people in the outfield, and then he missed and it fell in within the fence.
Uh-huh.
So he had to like run and go get it, and people were kind of giving him a bad time about that. And it's just really cool to be so involved in and do something you wouldn't ordinarily do with all different types of people there. It was not totally full, and there were lots of observations as far as how to operate and go to a large gathering. I think they did all right with that. And
well, it was outdoors.
It was open air, right? Yeah.
I don't know if the total attendance was limited because of COVID, but there was plenty of space around. I didn't feel at all in danger, and it seemed it was airy, so
I was thinking to myself, you know, at a certain point, there's like a point of no return. Like, I guess we're in it. We're going to just, but I think people were just having a good time, and most people were just excited to be there. And everybody was pretty relaxed about, you know, who is comfortable with what, and people left one another alone. It's pretty cool for the first game, ever.
Yeah.
First Yankees game.
First game that we've seen at the new Yankee Stadium, too.
Yeah, never been to the new one. I was kind of like taking in that they just how they laid it out. And
you know, for a time when they built the new stadium, they hadn't yet torn down the old stadium. And there were actually two Yankee stadiums right next to each other. And if you drove or took a train past that, you would see two baseball stadiums. It was really kind of weird.
Yeah, I was like quizzing. I was trying to figure it out. You're like, I don't know as much about how.
Yeah, I don't know exactly
like,
where it was in relation to it now, but it was a unique situation. And they were both called Yankee Stadium, and that's a good thing because it should be named after the team, not some corporation like Citi Field, and Shea Stadium made more sense because that's named after a person. So,
a lot of them get it so obscure and weird. You don't even know you're talking about a stadium. So,
Anyway,
that was a little bit of a wholesome Americana.
I was rooting for Seattle though to make it to the playoffs.
I heard they were doing something. They were somewhat close.
They were losing. But, that's what they were doing.
Yeah,
unfortunately. And if I'm not mistaken, and I don't mean to draw attention to this, but Seattle is the only team currently playing that has never made it to the World Series. And that's sad. That really is sad. And I truly hope one day Seattle not only makes it to the World Series, but wins the World Series. Because, for God's sake, you gotta have something. You got to have something to hold on to. But then again, you guys stole a hockey team from Quebec. So, not sure how I feel. I know how I feel about that.
You're mad about the Kraken.
The Seattle Kraken. Okay, you know what? Seattle does deserve a hockey team. Las Vegas does not. And not only does Las Vegas get a hockey team, they get a winning hockey team. You know, the people in Quebec, they're lined up around the block at a new facility they built just for this team that the NHL never awarded them. Because why? There's not enough hockey interest in Canada, and you'd rather have teams in Arizona and Nevada and Florida? Where next? Colombia? Puerto Rico? Argentina? What? The hockey players are up north. I know it's a different country, but get over it. There should be another team in the Toronto area. There should be a team in Quebec City. There should be teams all over Canada. I'm going to go on like this for the next half hour. So that's how I feel about that.
It's truly truly back to some semblance of normal that sports are the omnipresent hegemon of safe topics of discussion. Do you have anything that's unsafe? You know, that potent stuff that's, you know, it's got like a nice finish. It starts strong and then...
Did you watch the testimony today about Facebook?
Well, so now I heard, and I think it was on Facebook, that Facebook is bad.
Well, you didn't hear it yesterday because Facebook was down and it was out for about 6 hours. And boy, what timing. Isn't that something when everybody's eyes are already turned to Facebook as being the source of all kinds of nastiness and stupidity and harmful suggestions to people? They just completely vanish from the net. Not only Facebook, but Instagram, WhatsApp, everything else that is associated with Facebook. And, you know, I don't really use Facebook. Sometimes I check in. And literally when I do that, I find out, oh, my God, this person's getting married. This person had a kid. This person's dog did something cute. You know, things like that, that no one tells me in real life. You have to go to Facebook to find out. I think that's part of the problem. That's part of the, not that I'm not using Facebook. The problem is that you're assumed you have to use Facebook in order to communicate. The other problem is that there are parts of the world where Facebook provides the infrastructure, and that was down too. Having them be responsible for all this kind of thing, it's really problematic. I hate using that word, but it is problematic. There's this whistleblower at Facebook named Frances Haugen. She testified before Congress today. Before the Senate, she says, I joined Facebook because I think Facebook has the potential to bring out the best of us. I'm here today because I believe Facebook's products harm children, stoke division, and weaken our democracy. And in case you didn't see that she's saying two different things. She's saying she joined for one reason, but this is the other thing that happened. Yeah. So she's basically saying Facebook can and should be a better company. But over and over, she said that Facebook can make its gargantuan network safer, but they have chosen to put profits before people and their safety. So she said Facebook needs help. And that's what they were getting yesterday, a little bit of help by taking them off the net for a little while and having a timeout, which I think might be a good idea. This story from Vice, the company's leadership knows how to make Facebook and Instagram safer, but they won't make the necessary changes because they have put their astronomical profits before people. Congressional action is needed. They won't solve this crisis without your help. I get it. It's just Congress, they're the answer. I don't know. I think Congress is the problem. And the people are the answer. And the people need to do something about this. If we're not satisfied with something like Facebook, we need to speak up, hold back, do whatever it takes to put the pressure on. And I know that's idealistic. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen. So maybe Congress does have to do something, but will they? Will they get past getting in each other's way? I don't know. One thing, though, and I think we're making progress here, is identifying the problem. And social media, Facebook in particular, is the problem. Sure, there's good things. There's good things in any form of technology. You know, anything can be used for good or for evil. And right now, I think the evil is kind of tipping the balance a lot more than the good. You know, it's nice to be able to get updated pictures and see, you know, who's doing what, where. But there are other ways of doing that. You don't need Facebook to tell you these things. There's all sorts of apps or telephones or kinds of things that are used for communication or aren't used nearly as much today. And I think maybe that's another problem, is that we've forsaken the old technology for this, which, yes, has some advantages, but has a lot of really, really bad things associated with it.
Right. And the discussion, I think there's just like this sense, they're so bent on survival that I think there is some outside it's like oversight and intervention, but that's not something I'm here to decide. I do think that they're like things like transparency is like basically a hilarious bit of jargon for them. Like they talk about it. They have whole departments for this stuff. Again, they just want to survive and appear a certain way. And they like telling everyone about all the relative good they do. But how many millions of suicides or, you know, depression or whatever is going on? How does that, you know, like on a cute pet justify the other forms of negative influence and amplifying and targeting that the platform does? That is a machine prioritizing that. That's not a human. That's not a and worse yet, a sort of psychopathic capitalistic sort of money hungry machine, you know, just feeding the board and the profits. And then talking about transparency has a certain cynical, dark cynicism to it because they guard their algorithm. They mm-hmm. say it's private and proprietary and trade secrets and all that. But it's proven in these releases and what people have been talking about and reporting on for years now that it is primed for only a certain kind of engagement and it is being implemented in an irresponsible way, as opposed to what we're being told about all the relative goods of it. And it's silly at this point.
And you use the magic word amplifying, and that is what Facebook does. It amplifies an individual voice, sure, and that's a good thing. You know, you're able to get your opinion out there and find people who who agree and who value who you are, but it also amplifies the bullying. And that is where the problem is, because, you know, think about how bullies tortured you in your younger years. Maybe not everybody had that problem, but many of us did. Now you've given them amplification, where not only can they torture you physically, they can torture you with words, and they can get hundreds, thousands, even millions of people to join in and ridicule you. And you know, in formative years, that can be deadly. You know, your feelings of self-worth and confidence, they're very susceptible to all kinds of attacks. And this is more than many people can handle. I can't believe Facebook didn't get this from the start. You said they just want to survive. They're surviving. They're surviving. They're prospering. They're doing better than almost any business. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that they're just trying to get by. No, they are making money hand over fist. I feel absolutely no sympathy for that line. I have no sympathy for them saying that they're trying their best. No, they're not trying their best. IRC channels and bulletin boards did a better job of weeding out the hate than Facebook has done on a much greater scale.
And with far less resources.
Mm-hmm.
They consume so much. I mean, they're like knocking out whole industries, like with their open compute designs and building infrastructure and hardware, just because they had the bread mm-hmm. to just release designs for things that entire industries struggle to like sell network hardware. Like those businesses go out of business all the time. And this stupid website turned app turned mega multi-industry transnational ISP or whatever the heck they think they mm-hmm. are, was just building stuff just so they could get further and deeper into networks and take over and make it so that there is no other choice and wield that power and influence and wealth. It's concentrating it as much and as far and as widely as possible. And you know, I was listening to the show prior. We're just talking about English language. There's many other places in the world they've failed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that has led to or exasperated political corruption and instability playing on economic and other geopolitical aspects. I mean, the responsibility is not there. The transparency is a farce, and they are deserving of the scrutiny and the kinds of hard questions I hope they're going to get a lot more of.
Yeah,
but this is bravery on the part of people working at private entities, working for big, mm-hmm. powerful places that shut people down, want to shut people up. They want every bit of control. They try to sick their giant legal departments on everyone. It's sickening.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they can continue to do it with impunity. And their social influence will save them. And I think their credit there is running real close to empty.
But you talk about growing and enveloping and basically taking over everything around them. How is this healthy? I know we live in a capitalistic society, but capitalism is based on competition. It's based on innovation, developing new things. And if you have one company that just keeps swallowing up the competition and basically running the entire show, how is that healthy? And yet there are people who defend that and say, yeah, this is the American way. Well, that's the American way. The American way needs to change. This is not a good thing. And if there were, say, 20 Facebook equivalents out there, I dare say that we wouldn't be having the problems that we're having now, because what people want would be something that would win in the end, and the services that are hurting people would lose. Right now, we're pretty much stuck with it. If we want to use Facebook, we're stuck with the good and the bad, and there is so much bad. If you look at the divisiveness that has been plaguing this nation, it pretty much starts when social media started to get really, really popular. And that's telling. That's extremely telling. Yeah, we had differences in the past, but it was nothing like this. You couldn't weaponize the hatred that so many people are spreading around now, and who feel empowered and unashamed at the things they are saying. I don't know if we can recover from this, because the Pandora's box has been opened. But let there be no doubt that social media played a huge, major, probably critical part in that.
I think it's interesting to other companies like Google that became larger and delved into areas that were not their foundational area of expertise. And I think that's a thing that is lost when you have these very large concentrated tech companies. They started one way and they think they can do everything and be everything to everyone. And I think a lot of people, like when social media really took off, when it stopped being a website and moved into being a software application run on a smartphone and had all of this other kinds of monetization going on in the background, that's around the same time I think Google itself stopped training and investing its resources on its expertise in search. Mm-hmm. It completely fragmented and went off into monetizing every possible competitive market they could, some other of the large entities could attack their business model through, the shipping company that used to sell books. There are so many examples of these crazy concentrations moving totally outside of their core business, but convincing us that they can do it and be everything. And then that way, I think it's like you said, it's in this very bizarre thing, like unrecognizable market that none of us as individuals really have a sense of. Even the companies themselves are sort of autonomous and like headless, right? They're rudderless. Like, everybody's there kind of working, but what's the point? Like, what are they for? No one really knows, and they're doing so much twisting around and maneuvering that only they can kind of fight each other. At least that's the perception, I think. And when you have people that have seen what's actually going on and they divulge it, they talk and tell the stories, that's when all of those edifices come crumbling down. The veneer of something that is so powerful is lost. You realize nobody knows what they're doing there. They're just on autopilot, as I said, surviving, gobbling up businesses and money and information and rationalizing it all along the way.
Thank you, David Lynch, for that.
Hey, I got some weekend projects. I'm building a nice little cubby for my phone.
No, I said that in case people don't know. David Lynch has this thing every day where he gives the weather forecast. Check it out on YouTube. Type David Lynch weather and you'll see every single day he gives the weather, and it always ends with golden sunshine all along the way. And then there's a second feature where he pulls a ball out of a jar and picks a lucky number for every day, 1 through 10. And it's never 7 for some reason. Yeah.
This is more independent study.
Yeah, you got to use YouTube for that.
It's a whole other network.
Did you see on YouTube?
What's going on?
We watch a lot of train video, live cams. It's awesome. It really is.
Oh, I know.
Welcome back, Norwalk, Connecticut. It's good to see Metro North and Amtrak again. But there was one in Tucson, Arizona. And yesterday morning, there was a shootout on an Amtrak train. It was captured on this camera. And some lunatic was open fire on DEA agents who were searching the train for drugs. Apparently, they found some on this guy, and he killed the cop. He killed a DEA agent. Amtrak has not had a good week. I'll say that. They have a derailment, killed 3 people out in Montana, and now this. Boy, I don't know what
they
to
need
say.
That infrastructure bill needs to pass, I bet.
Well, I don't know how the infrastructure would help, well, first of all, maybe you should search people for guns when they get on the train. That might be a good start. You can put them in checked luggage, apparently, but you can't, just like on airplanes. But, airplanes don't let you bring guns on board. I don't think trains should either. But, you know, we live in a society where you can't search all the time, and they keep passing these bills that pretty much encourage you to carry dangerous weapons everywhere. So I don't know what the solution is. I really don't. Other than to take a good long look at what we're doing. There's been some reaction against that sort of thing at school board meetings. You've seen some of the video from school board meetings? Some of the lunacy that's going on there, and Long Island is no exception. But the according to Fox News, so take it for what it's worth. And whenever you see headlines from Fox News, they're always basically tilting things to the right. They're saying that Biden backtracks or gives up or stumbles through something. Basically, anything that has criticism in the title, before even looking at the source, you know it's either the New York Post or Fox News or the Washington Examiner. It's something, some right-wing outlet like that. And similar things on the left, but not as much. Not as much. And not as shrill either. Anyway, so this particular article is about domestic terrorism and school boards. The Justice Department is facing a wave of backlash as parents criticize its recent decision to investigate potential acts of violence against school boards across the country. Okay, well, you know, it's easy to say a sentence like that because no matter what you do, no matter how good a thing you've done, somebody is going to criticize you, and there'll be waves of protest from certain groups of people. So it's a very easy sentence to say. The reason the Justice Department is looking into this sort of thing is because school boards have been threatened with violence by angry and unhinged parents who I don't know who they're mad at exactly. There's a pandemic. People are dying. The pandemic spreads, as pandemics do. And school boards are trying to stop that from happening. Now, instead of being mad at the virus, which, you know, you don't really accomplish anything by being mad at a virus, but you're mad at the people who are fighting the virus. It doesn't make any sense. We're all frustrated. We all are dealing with this, and it's a pain in the ass. But those of us who study what a virus is and how it works know that if you take certain precautions, the virus can be defeated. If you don't take those precautions, it will last forever. And it's only lasted this long because not enough people have either taken precautions or gotten the vaccine. Period. You can't argue with that unless you just want to make up facts. And that's what's going on at these school board meetings. Azra Normani, Vice President of Investigations and Strategy at Parents Defending Education, says, "I am what a domestic terrorist looks like. You owe parents an apology," with a big exclamation point afterwards. Normani's group has been conducting deep research into how school boards across the country are implementing so-called woke ideas in their curricula. And that's another thing. I don't know where this is coming from, but teaching history, you know, if it's history that doesn't reflect well on a particular race of people, namely the dominant race, that's not woke. That's accurate. All right. If a teacher goes into a classroom and makes things up without any basis in reality or fact, well, that's still not woke. That's just wrong. But that's not what they're upset about. They're upset about teaching things that basically show how bad slavery was, how racism continues up until this day. I mean, are there people really who are denying these things are happening or have happened? Just the other week, it might have been on the other radio show, we were talking about how none of us were taught about Tulsa, about the massacre of Tulsa 100 years ago of the black community. Why? Why were none of us all the way through college taught about this? Were you taught about this? People who are middle-aged or in your 20s or 30s, anybody? That's the kind of thing we're talking about. Why should that not be taught when all sorts of other much less monumental events that involved a different race of people, you know, a battle with the British, for instance, or something that was fairly minor in the bigger scope, that gets taught, this doesn't. That's what people are upset about. not these people, people who are trying to get history taught in schools. And there's resistance. There's resistance to that. There's continuing issues at school board meetings because a certain contingent has taken over and is demanding that history be taught in their particular slant, their version, and that this vaccine somehow not be taught as something that's effective or to not penalize teachers who don't want to wear masks or who don't want to get vaccinated or parents who insist on sending their kids to schools without masks on and exposing them to the virus for some unknown reason. It's a bizarre argument, but through social media and through other means, it's gaining traction and it's a real problem. And yeah, there are violent people out there who have expressed willingness to cause harm. And that is domestic terrorism. You know, when you're trying to push a political platform of one sort or another, and you're using violence to affect that kind of change, that is terrorism. So, yeah, you might not recognize the faces of terrorists. They might seem like your neighbors. Guarantee you, everywhere in the world where terrorism has reared its ugly head, they are neighbors. They are normal people until they become something else.
Truly, yeah. I'm so... stunned at the power play there. I mean, it's nothing new. I think that this sort of parental intervention in school districts has been typical in you know, helicopter parenting and wanting all kinds of things. This, though, is next level in mm-hmm. the like confrontational nature. And I find it ironic that there's all this interest in telling history a certain way, especially given the history of the last couple of years. Then I guess, when I think about it that way, it doesn't surprise me all that much. Keep talking. See what happens.
Well, yeah. Hopefully enough people have enough common sense to be able to fight back against this sort of thing. But it's frightening. You know, I really think what you call helicopter parenting is a very unhealthy thing because, basically kids are not taught the right things. They're taught that their parents are always going to, bully the teacher if you're told something that you don't want to be told, or if you act a certain way, no matter how bad it is, it's going to be the teacher that gets the earful from the parents. And I think, you know, you have to, when you send your kid to school, you have to pretty much relinquish a bit of the discipline and the information that they are given to those particular people. And if they're doing a bad job of it, that will come out, absolutely. But it's not a debate as to what to cover and what not to cover. That's what teachers do. You know, you don't go into a hospital. Well, actually, these people probably do go into hospitals and debate how to perform surgeries. But come on already. At some point, you have to say, okay, you're the teacher. You know best as far as teaching. Unless you don't, in which case, send your kid to some other school.
Right. But also don't, I don't want to hear for a minute from people that are taking resources away from schools that won't pass levies and so forth in various districts or are diverting funds to charter districts. Maybe charters are useful in some areas, but they shouldn't come at the expense of writing existing systems that desperately need resources. They need more teachers so that some of those classrooms aren't as full and that we're actually teaching young people instead of just moving them from room to room and across grades. It's silly, I think, to be not trusting and putting some kind of faith in what the district has approved and what the teachers are there to do, but you can't hamstring them and then go and yell at them at the same time. I just think that's insane.
Yeah, and for God's sake, think of what teachers have to go through these days. Just trying to deal with a very hazardous health situation, then this kind of thing is the last thing they need. We should be showing support, not only for teachers, for healthcare workers, for all kinds of people that are in the middle of this. Now healthcare workers, instead of being seen as heroes, are being attacked. And the insanity of what's out there. And again, I point a lot of this to social media as a cause, but it's really, really hard to take in, to believe. Did you see the story about Trump's former press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, who, you know, we hadn't heard much from her because she never actually held a press conference. But boy, the thing she is saying now about Trump, she just put out a book, but yeah, she's promoting her book. But still, what's in the book is pretty amazing from somebody who had that kind of access. And she basically admits she didn't vote for Trump in 2020, and she is deathly afraid of Trump in 2024. She talks about the craziness of what was going on behind the scenes, the danger that this man posed and continues to pose. This is his former press secretary. Imagine somebody so close to him. And how many times have we seen this? People who have worked very close to him, you know, brought in as allies, leave as enemies. And one of the things she said was that if he gets reelected, you know, in 2024, you can count on the January 6th insurrectionists working in the White House. That is what we will get. And honestly, if we let that happen, that is what we deserve. So it's some frightening prospects. And it's not helped by the divisiveness with the Democrats. But it needs to happen. It needs to happen. I'm glad the progressives are drawing a line and saying, no, we are not going to support this agenda if we basically get betrayed again. And that is what is going on right now. You have moderates like Sinema and Manchin who are basically not even saying what it is they want. And not allowing the $3.5 trillion bill to go through. And basically progressives saying, we're not going to vote on infrastructure until we get something like you promised, like Nancy Pelosi promised. They need to do this. They need to be respected. They need to be heard. And the Democrats need to come together. Or 2022 and 2024 are not going to be good years. And it might be game, set, and match at that point. I don't know how you come back from that. I really don't. But I am optimistic. I do have hope for the future. I hope you do too.
Yes, yes. This mysterious thing we call unity is... it's out there somewhere.
It is. It is. And we must get out there somewhere as well because we're out of time. I understand Finn's not in tonight. Kenny will be filling in for him. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. Tell us your thoughts, what you think, and we will see you next week. Here's a piece from our friend Louis Ludwig with some very telling words. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
In my juvenile days, not all that I'd say was especially friendly or kind. But lucky for you, the value was true when I gave you a piece of my mind. Ah, but somehow, in the years between, all the words seemed to lose what they used to mean. Now it literally kills me that totally everything's awesome and pretty okay. Well, I hear you, just got nothing to say. What passes for arguments, nothing but sentiment wrapped in a buzzword or two. Ad hoc and ad hominem. Well, so's your mama and mama, rubber, you're nothing but glue. And I wonder if even you comprehend the point of this verbal barrage that rolls without end. Now Shakespeare is twirling and Lincoln is hurling. Jesus just tweeted, oy vey. As for me, boys, I got nothing to say. Radio, turn off the internet, the TV and all the smartphones. Slip on the lock, and if someone knocks, please tell them that I'm not at home. It's golden, the silence that flows. When you give up on telling them every damn thing that you know. From a man who talks from the time he wakes up straight through to the end of the day. It might surprise you, but I got nothing to say. Hey, I got nothing to say. Hey, I got. Talk amongst yourself.
This is Yorm McCalkin, and I'm at the Fur Peace Ranch right now, but when I'm in Long Island, I listen to WUSB out of Stony Brook.
Hey everybody, this is Maurice Diesel. I've been sitting at home lately on house arrest, so it's been hard for me to keep up with what's going down. But there's something that's never hard to understand. That's beating your pets. Listen man, if you want that motherfucker to beat your dog, or you smack your cat around, or just like yelling at your birds and shit like that, this is crazy, man. They be pets. They don't know. Listen, this is Maurice Diesel. Now listen now. Listen. I'm serious. Don't feed your pets. Feed them. They love you, man. When you come home late at night and you drunk, you know the dog is there and they're gonna sniff you and stuff. The kitty will be petting, be on the side of pettings. So be real with them little peoples, the critters. This is Maurice Diesel and I approve this message.
I first got the vaccine, number one, as obviously to protect myself, but honestly to protect my family. I've had direct discussions after getting the vaccine with members of my own family, and I think in general there was just kind of overall skepticism, especially in the Black community, but in Black and Brown communities alike. There are historic health inequities, and so there are reasonable concerns from members of those communities. That's a community that I belong to as well, and that's why I had to inform myself and look at the data myself. The data was very reassuring, and one thing for me as a Black American was seeing how diverse the patient population was in each trial and feeling comfortable with that as well. There is lots of misinformation in the media, and it's hard to combat that. And so I would go with trusted sources, medical professionals, people in your community, people in your family, ask about their experiences and get familiar.
Baby called up about a new place in the hood. The food was hot and the music damn good. Sat on the corner of 8th Avenue, oh, with an ugly red door, crack windows, no view. It was the juke joint. Yeah, the juke joint.
If you don't like to dance, you don't stand a chance. If you don't like to dance, you don't stand a chance at the cheap joint. Found a table with a broke leg, no chair. My baby wants to dance and he really didn't care. No room on the floor, so we shook it where we stood. Sweated all night with our people from the hood at the cheap joint. The cheap joint. If you don't like to dance, you don't stand a chance. If you don't like to dance, you don't stand a chance at the cheap joint. Whack my hips on a sweaty dance floor. Time to leave, but I gotta shake a little more. My man tapped out so he could sip his gin. No problem, baby. Got your friend at the cheap joint. The cheap joint. If you don't like to dance, you don't stand a chance. If you don't like to dance, you don't stand a chance at the cheap joint. Every time they play my song, my feet start moving on their own. Why you juke puts me in a trance. Come on, baby, I just wanna dance.
Yeah, that's right. It's 7 o'clock, 7:04 on a Tuesday night. I'm here on a special evening because my good buddy Finn Miller couldn't make it in for Finn's Revolution, so I'm filling in. My name's Kenny Hahn, and the name of my show is The Juke Joint. You can hear me most of the time on Tuesday afternoons, every other Tuesday from 2 to 4. Alternate with Natasha, the great Miss Natasha, and her great show. The name of her show is not in my brain right now. Sound something. Anyway, I want to get the show started with little Mike Zito. He's got a brand new CD called Resurrection, and here's the title cut, Resurrection.
Meant to be.
Yes, we need a resurrection.
Saw it coming.